Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
Support for LAist comes from Visual Communications, presenting VC Film Fest, celebrating 40 years of Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander filmmaking, with over 200 films May 1st through 10th. Info at festival.vcmedia.org.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. Amy Nicholson writes on film for the New York Times and hosts the podcast Unspooled. We're going to lead off with the sequel to Godzilla vs. Kong, which came back out in 2021. Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire, just out, starring Rebecca Hall. Adam Wingard is the director. Tim?
Yeah, Godzilla, Kong. I guess we just sort of figured that out. The 2021 film, Godzilla vs. Kong. Not this. This one, they're working together a little bit. They get around to it. And because it's a sequel, it features many of the same people. So we have Rebecca, we have Brian Tyree Henry, we have Kaylee Hall, a few other people from that 2021 movie. The movie that kicked off the series, though, was actually that 2014 film, Garth's film, Godzilla, before Kong gets mashed up into the picture. We'll talk about those in just a second here. This is great fun. It's a big, dumb movie that tries to explain with scientific language about how we get to a place called Hollow Earth and why there are all these gigantic titan monsters and bugs and everything around it. And, you know, hey, look, that's all fine. I prefer it when they don't try to explain it. Let's just let the monsters fight, boys. That's all we really need to do. But there's a lot of comedy in this film. As opposed to, let's say, even that 2014 film, or more recently, something like Shin Godzilla or Godzilla Minus One, which are serious films. They're kind of like that Raymond Burr film.
Yeah.
Big giant monster, yes. Subject matter, very serious. This alludes to some interesting things about humanity and how we confab with nature and whatever, but this is just big and dumb. And fast with Dan Stevens as a big gigantic ape dentist at some point. And you know, when they need something in this film, you know what they do? They make it up. They just make it up. Kong hurts his arm. You know, we happen to have built this gigantic metal Kong arm that we got it over there. let's just roll with it. Look, in some ways, trivial, particularly if you've recently seen like Minus One or Shin. But fun. And I think that's all you really need is fun in this. You know, the Kong in this is really amazing. He stands up upright for one thing. Not like that Peter Jackson film where he was on all or most of the films. Kong in these films stands upright like a dude. And Godzilla, when he gets mad, he goes pink. Pink. And I think that's on purpose.
Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire, Amy?
Yeah, I mean, what I like about Adam Wingard's take on the Godzilla franchise is he knows he's just making a big, dumb monster movie. I mean, Godzilla Minus One won an Oscar this month. This movie is not going to win an Oscar. This is not an Oscar movie. It is just loud and large, and it knows that if you are a person who wants to go in and see a very good-looking, ridiculous B-movie, that's what he's going to give you. Because he has actually, I think, great visual flair when he tells these Godzilla stories. His use of color is amazing. Yeah, the pink atomic breath. He's just painting mountains pink and purple in the background just because he can. A lot of slow motion, speeding things up. I mean, but what I really, I think, respect most of all about his approach to Godzilla is that he lets the animals just act like animals. They're not that obnoxiously anthropomorphized here. He goes a little bit more emotional with Kong in this one than they did in the last one. Last one, Kong is just a beast. Loved it. But here, he's letting Kong, I think, transition into being a little bit more of like a personality. There's a really good scene in here that I think shows the kind of control that Adam Wingard can have when he's really working at his best in this franchise, where Kong meets a bunch of monkeys, and one of the monkeys tells the other monkeys a joke in monkey, and the whole thing is wordless. It's like, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it was funny to me.
It was so funny.
I got it.
Yeah, you got to be a good director to pull that off. Yeah.
Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire, rated PG-13. It's in wide release. Wicked Little Letters, a British comedic drama starring Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley. It's directed by Thea Sherrick. Amy.
Yeah, this is a very, very funny little British comedy that I could not believe was inspired by a true story from post-World War I Britain. But it actually is. And it stars two of my favorite British actors right now. You got Olivia Colman and you got Jesse Buckley. They're playing neighbors. And Olivia Colman is, you know, Edith. She's this good Christian woman living this very pious life with her family. And Jesse Buckley is being very Jesse Buckley. You know, she's a wild Irish rose singing around. She's a single mom. She's got a boyfriend living with her. And then Edith begins to get these hate letters that are just so foul. They're things I cannot say on the air. They're terrible.
Yeah.
And the whole neighborhood just decides that the person sending them has to be Jesse Buckley's Rose because she's the person who doesn't fit in. This actually happened, and the story became a big deal in the newspapers, and it involved a third character who's played here by Ajana Vasin, who is like the first female cop in this area as well. And so you have these three women kind of solving this mystery. And at first I was thinking, oh no, this is going to be way too cute, way too twee, way too on the nose about sexism. And it is way too on the nose about sexism. But when you have these three actresses in here, it just becomes ferocious. And I found myself getting pretty involved in who is actually sending these letters.
Mm.
And a bit of screaming.
And Timothy. Timothy Spall. So he really has the juiciest thing in this movie, to be honest, because he gets to speak those letters out loud lots of times in this movie. And he does it with this energy, this vitriol. They're really foul letters, mostly sexual, but nevertheless done in that sort of Irish / British sort of way. But I'm like, whoa, somebody wrote that in 1920? Like, somebody wrote that.
Because again, this was a true story.
You can look them up. I looked them up. And he gets to say that. He gets to say all of that stuff in this movie. And there's this whole trial and things come out. And it was just so much fun and so ridiculous. And at the end of the day, it's kind of a women's empowerment movie in an odd sort of way for 1920 or something like that, whatever it was. Yeah.
The movie is Wicked Little Letters, directed by Thea Sherrick, Olivia Colman, Jesse Buckley star. It's rated R. You can see it at AMC's The Grove 14, AMC's Century City 15, and then next week it expands it to a wider release, Wicked Little Letters. California is an Italian drama. The film is directed by Alessandro Casagoli and Casey Kaufman. Tim, what do you think of California?
I like this movie very much. Those two directors you mentioned made this lovely little documentary called Butterfly, 2018, that covered a boxer from Italy, a young woman boxer from Italy, in the boxing club that she was in as she worked her way to a bronze medal in those Tokyo Olympics. While they were filming that, there's this other young girl who was just roaming around that boxing gym, who's just fantastic, and she's the lead in this movie, Jafari here, and she was so captivating. If you've seen Butterfly, you'll know why they chose her as the lead for this movie. And what they did is they incorporated her actual life. She's a young Moroccan girl. Then she was about 9. In this film, she's about 13. And they follow her in real time, like Linklater's About a Boy, how he followed that kid for X number of years. They do that with this young actress. For the next 5 years, they follow her, working this narrative story that it's also reflective of her actual life. What does she want? She wants to go what she calls home, to Morocco. She remembers Morocco. 5, 6, 7 years old. And her family, hardworking, her big sister, her mother and father, who are never around because, you know, they're working there in that little town in Naples. All she can do is think about this really sort of mystical, magical Morocco in her child's mind. And she wants to go home. And we follow her over these years as she does everything she can, including working at this salon called California. And it's only called California because when the owner ordered the sign, she spelled it wrong. And the little girl kept telling her, no, you don't spell it like that. She ordered it anyway. Now it's a big old dumb sign out there with an E on it. But she's so sharp, this little 13, 14-year-old girl, that the owner eventually lets her start running that shop. And she's handling it all by herself until the social workers come around. Shouldn't you be in school? And then we get that movie. But it's just a lovely, lovely film. This little girl is fantastic. I hope she stays in the acting business. She's going to be great.
We're talking about Ikram Jafari, who's the star of the film, also co-starring Khadija Jafari. The film's directed and written by Alessandro Casagoli and Casey Kaufman. It's unrated in Italian. The two main characters are brother and sister in real life, and you can see the film streaming on Film Movement Plus. That's Film Movement Plus. The documentary, Steve, a documentary in two pieces, is as suggests an Apple TV Plus two-part documentary on Steve Martin. Morgan Neville is the director. Amy?
Yeah, these two parts of this documentary are divided into then and now. So the rise of Steve Martin and then Steve Martin of the present. And they're both absolutely feature-length, very long documentaries that have their own individual style. You know, the style of then is all archival footage, amazing archival footage, because it turns out that Steve Martin is a person who saved everything. He even at one point presents a postcard that he had written to his girlfriend announcing that he's now going to become an avant-garde comedian. And then the Steve Martin of now is set in the present day where he's wandering around making breakfast. You see him on camera for the first time, and it's a little more conventional where the talking heads are now on camera talking to you, and you get to see him just pal around. The first half of this, the early part of Steve Martin, is really the standout of the two. It's just such a fascinating, relatable story for anybody living here trying to make it in the entertainment business about a kid from Orange County, doesn't think he has a lot of talent, and really has to figure out who he's going to be because he just has to be on stage. You know, the years of him being in debt and needing money and how am I going to get there and who am I going to be? And he kept these real diaries. He astoundingly has this way of being of showing us that he was very deliberate and methodical about figuring out how to look stupid. And he just reveals all of that. So the first part of this, just phenomenal, and I cannot believe the footage that that Morgan Neville was able to turn up. Second part, a little more normal.
More conventional. Talking heads begin. The first part of it, literally, we hear Steve. We never see Steve. We see him in the images and the video from back in the day, but we never see him today. And you don't need to. That's how dense the material is in this movie. Handwritten notes from his diaries. He wrote down everything that happened in every performance. A little slow tonight. I didn't hit that line quite right. The crowd this, the crowd that. We see how he crafts who he's going to be. And look. This seems to be true of so many people, particularly men, I think, driven to heights. He had that mean, grumpy dad. And that mean, grumpy dad, who even when he was a millionaire and the jerk is 1978, that was the biggest movie in the world for a moment. He was the biggest comedian in the world for a moment. Stadiums, his dad. You know what was wrong with that show? That's his dad.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're out there and you got that dad, hey, keep swinging, kid. Keep swinging.
We're talking about Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces. It's streaming on Apple TV Plus. Morgan Neville is the director. It's rated TVMA. The Beautiful Game is a British sports drama. Bill Nighy, Michael Ward, Callum Scott Howell star. Thea Sherrick is the director of the film. The Beautiful Game. Tim.
Oh, I love this movie. It's as ordinary as the dirt that you play soccer on, but I don't care. It's fantastic. Bill Nighy plays this guy who was formerly a very important soccer player. And he's leading this team in the U.K. He's going to take him on this international tournament. He sees this young black man playing with these kids in the park. Hey, that guy can play. We need to get him on the team. Now, Bill Nighy knows something about that guy. He knows the thing about that guy that's true about all of the guys that are going to play in this international tournament. This is a real tournament. Started in 2001. All of the players are homeless. They're all homeless. I actually saw a piece about this. I don't know, maybe it was ESPN or something like that. And he engages this young man, Michael, and he says, look, I'm not homeless. It's one of those movies.
Yeah.
And we go, and we have this ordinary movie where they go and they play in this international tournament in Rome, and the extraordinary Valerie Golina is in this movie. Oh, my God, my heart almost stopped when I saw her. It's just this movie that plays out exactly the way these movies all play out. I'm crying like a baby. Watching this movie, fully knowing everything that's going to happen, and then they show this montage of the end of the actual folks from these actual teams from around the world, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's just so wonderful. This is ordinary. And it's grand, and I love it.
The Beautiful Game is the film, directed by Thea Sherrick, who has a second film out this week, Wicked Little Letters. She directed both of them. The Beautiful Game, starring Bill Nighy, is rated PG-13, and it's streaming on Netflix. Let's at least get started on Dog Man, which is a French crime thriller, and actually it's English language, even though it's from France. Caleb Landry-Jones and Jojo T. Gibbs star. Luc Besson is the writer-director. Amy, please give us about 30 seconds. We'll break and come back.
Oh, I can start off by saying that this is a very, very weird movie. It's best to watch this movie, I would say, as like an acting exercise for Caleb Landry-Jones, who I think is just this really interesting actor. He's a very intense oddball who likes going for the strangest movies possible. Here he plays a paraplegic drag queen who commands an army of dogs. And the movie opens with him arrested, dressed like Marilyn Monroe in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And then from there it goes into a, I bet you're wondering how we got here. And I guess we'll get to that in a second.
We'll continue. Find out more about Dog Man, which is set in New Jersey. The film is rated R. It's in select theaters. We'll also hear about the documentary Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, which takes us back to Freaknik on the streets of Atlanta during the 80s and 90s. Those and more movies coming up. It's Film Week on LA's 89.3. We'll be back with more with Amy and Tim in just a minute.
Support comes from Visual Communications, presenting VC Film Fest, celebrating 40 years showcasing Asian and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander filmmaking, featuring over 200 works ranging from narrative film, documentary films, photo exhibits, and new media. VC Film Fest honors our beloved elder cultural workers, linking them to present and emerging artists to empower communities and challenge perspectives. May 1st through 10th in Little Tokyo and in Long Beach. Info at festival.vcmedia.org.
It's Film Week on LA's 89.3, and as always, if you joined us late and you missed what our critics had to say about the biggest films of the week, no worries. You can listen whenever it's convenient for you, wherever you get your podcasts, or at LAist.com. Our critics this week are Amy Nicholson and Tim Cogshell, and Amy was just starting us off on the Luc Besson film Dog Man, starring Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah, when we left off, Caleb Landry Jones was getting arrested dressed like Marilyn Monroe. There are a million different ways you could pull this movie apart and refuse to engage with it. I mean, starting with the fact that it is pretending it's set in Newark, New Jersey, but is very obviously shot in Europe with a bunch of European actors in the back supporting cast. I would not recommend watching Dogman for its half-baked ruminations on God and forgiveness, or for a totally boring subplot in here about a lady social worker and her abusive ex-husband. But I would recommend watching this if you're at all curious to see how far Caleb Landry Jones is willing to go in a performance where he's wearing old school leg braces and false eyelashes, a scene where he lip syncs an Edith Piaf song and is in its entirety. I mean, it feels like this movie was made because Caleb Landry Jones is worried he's never going to get to play the Joker, you know, which is Hamlet for young actors. So if he never gets to play the Joker, here he's kind of doing a combination Joker and Batman all at once, a bizarre version of both. In an art house style.
Dog Man is the film, Tim.
If the Joker spoke like Donna Reed, which is the way he speaks in this film, he's like, and there's a reason he does that from these magazines. He has this really terrible childhood. His father, vicious father, who trained dogs to fight, makes him grow up inside this kennel with all these dogs. He literally lives in the kennel, this vicious brother. This is classic Luc Besson. And then he delivers a whole bunch of wacky characters. One crazy, really, the paraplegic cross-dressing transgender guy, not the craziest guy in this movie. Not the craziest guy in this movie at all. And I suppose what Amy says is true. He is astounding in this role. He is just pulling this role to pieces. And he's extraordinary so that you sit there completely engaged in this film where there's not a believable moment in it.
Yeah.
At all. But he's fascinating.
Dog Man from writer-director Luc Besson is rated R in select theaters. The documentary Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, takes us back to the street party in Atlanta of the 80s and 90s. Tim.
Yeah, in 1982, to be specific, around the Atlanta area, D.C. Atlanta area, all those historical black colleges, some folks got together and said, well, you know, we can't really afford, and sometimes they're not really welcome at some of the places where spring break happens, Daytona and places like that. So we're going to create our own picnic party, Freaknik. It's a portmanteau. And they started doing it. 82, 50, 60 people the first year, 100, 150 people the second year, 2,000 people the third year. By the time you get to the middle, late 90s, 150, 200,000 people attending these parties. Now, they don't have these anymore. And there's a reason for that. And that's in this movie, too.
As so often happens with spring break events.
We know that, I think in Florida this just passed.
Yeah, this happened in Miami, there was an issue, Palm Springs, and then they had all kinds of problems, had to stop it in Palm Springs.
But as these things grew, as these freaknicks grew, they became a cultural touchstone for Black Southern America. These events were a font for Southern hip-hop. Lil Jon, all those cats came out of this. They didn't perform there. There was a lot of soul in hip-hop and R&B, too. 1983, I was stationed in Washington, D.C., had me a little freaknik. So I know how this goes. This is kind of controversial over on Hulu because your parents are probably in this movie.
You're freaky parents.
Steel yourself for that. Your 25-year-old parents are not something you want to see.
Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told is unrated. It's streaming on Hulu. It's directed by P. Frank Williams. Asphalt City is a thriller starring Sean Penn and Ty Sheridan. It's directed by Jean-Stéphane Sauvier. Amy, what'd you think of Asphalt City?
Yeah, Asphalt City is a movie that's really trying to just be, I guess, Taxi Driver of the modern age, where the taxi drivers are paramedics driving around in New York that basically looks like something out of Hieronymus Bosch. This is a movie all about doom and gloom and screaming people in misery, and the dog even gets shot. It's a rough film. You've got Ty Sheridan as kind of the rookie paramedic, and you've got Sean Penn as the cynical one who's been there a long time. It's the kind of movie that's just so on the nose with its metaphors that even though Ty Sheridan is playing this guy from Colorado who's supposed to be timid and overwhelmed, he walks around the whole time wearing this bright red jacket with angel wings on it just because they want to make a point that he's an angel walking around all the sinners of this earth. I found this just gloomy, 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 and it made me sad because I like Ty Sheridan as an actor, and this movie is not doing him any favors.
Asphalt City, Tim.
This movie's over 2 hours long, and that's really what the problem is. If it stuck to the thing that it's actually about, the sort of gritty realism of those movies from the 70s, you know, Friedkin and all that kind of stuff, you know, we're going to be in this real world space watching these people do what they do. I'm going to leave it alone. We're just going to do the End of Watch is a recent one. Jake Gyllenhaal and
that's a good one.
I really liked End of Watch.
Yeah. And they're just doing their cop thing, but it's just a daily. When this film is that, just the daily, it's intense. That first scene, oh my God, this film grabs you by the throat, and it does that about four or five times through this movie. Then you got all that other space where we have to talk about our feelings. It takes the energy out of a film that I think otherwise might have just been an interesting, just sort of, this is what this is like.
So go back and see the Under the Radar End of Watch instead of Asphalt City, starring Sean Penn, Ty Sheridan, is rated R in select theaters. The Irish action drama In the Land of Saints and Sinners stars Liam Neeson and Kerry Condon. Robert Lorenz, the director. Tim?
Period piece set during the early 70s, doing the Troubles in Ireland. And we get our Liam Neeson playing a different guy than he usually plays in most movies, yet he's still playing the same guy, because at the end of the day, you don't want to cross Liam Neeson in any movie that he's ever in. So he's that guy, but in this movie he's a killer, and he's killed a lot of folks, and he's moved himself out to this bucolic town in Donegal or wherever it is in Ireland, where nobody knows who he is or what he does. After one of those terrible things goes down where a child is killed in front of a pub that some IRA members set a bomb, he has to do a job, and that job leads some people to wanting to take him out, and they come to this town. So he has to do what he has to do to protect this town. But is he a saint or is he a sinner? This is a really, really good movie. And, you know, because I poke a lot of fun at Liam for making the same movie over and over again. But this just goes to show that you can play that guy without playing that guy.
In the Land of Saints and Sinners, starring Liam Neeson. It's written by Mark Michael McNally and Terry Lone. Robert Lorenz directed. It's rated R in select theaters. The comedy Lousy Carter stars David Krumholtz, Martin Starr, and Olivia Thirlby. It's written and directed by Bob Byington. Amy.
Yeah, this is almost more of an anti-comedy from Bob Byington, who is this Austin cult filmmaker who has enough of this kind of underground rep that he can get some really good talents in these low-key, low-budget movies. This is about a professor, that's David Krumholtz, who learns that he has 6 months to live. But the joke of the film, the joke that you're kind of not laughing at, but you're quietly snorting at, is that he's just not the kind of person to do much about dying, or he's not the kind of person who's going to be missed when he's gone, that nobody in this film cares. Not his therapist, not his doctors, not his mistress, not his best friend, not his students. Nobody really cares whether or not this man lives or dies. And so after a while, all the ways in which this entire world that this professor is living in is just cold and miserable, start to stack up and you just can't do anything but laugh about it, you know? And so when you let this tone of this movie kind of work on you, it becomes good in a way where it's also just off-putting in every single frame. You know, it has a strange rhythm. I don't think it even wants to be a good film in certain ways. The technicals are bad. The editing is bad. The sound mixing is bad. It's just all about that tone of apathy. And the performances are working on here. I also really love, there's a actor-director, Jocelyn DeBoer, who's in here as the mistress. Oh, she's so funny. And Steven Root, as his therapist, has some of the best lines.
We're talking about Lousy Carter. The comedy is at the Alamo Drafthouse in downtown L.A. and available on demand. It's unrated. The documentary, The Lie, The Murder of Grace Mullane, is about a true crime story. It's directed by Helena Cohen. Tim?
Yeah, devastating. An international story. 2018, young Grace Mullane was killed. 2019 is when this trial happened. But for her actual murder, everything about her murder is documented in this film by videotape. Videotape in the hotel room, in the hotel where she was killed, elevator, foyer footage, all this kind of stuff, the park where her body was taken, all of that was documented in New Zealand by video cameras everywhere. So we have this guy who was accused of a murder. He tells this story about how they were involved in rough sex and he accidentally strangled her to death. That videotape is in this film too. And they juxtapose him telling this ridiculous story against the images from all of these cameras, literally hundreds of cameras, that they can time code every moment of what actually happened, as I said, but for her actual murder. It's very devastating. In some ways, I felt, I don't know, it felt like a violation of, I don't know, me, her family. Her family's very much in the film during the period, her trial, her father, a very strong figure in advocating for the telling of the truth about what happened to her. But it left me feeling like I had watched a snuff film. So I don't know. It depends on how one engages these sorts of things. I'm a ridiculously emotional person. And that was tough. This young woman is all over this movie. And knowing exactly what happens makes it really difficult to look at live videotape of what happens.
The Lie, The Murder of Grace Mullane. It's available on demand. The movie's unrated, directed by Helena Cohen. The Listener is a film that stars Tessa Thompson, also directed by Steve Buscemi. Alessandro Kamen is the screenwriter of the film. The Listener, Amy.
Yeah, this is a very, very, very small film. It feels like Steve Buscemi's trying to get his confidence behind the camera, and it doesn't quite work out for him. The idea is that this is set during the pandemic, you know, right when quarantine hits. So kind of flashback of all of that, people calling and wondering about masks. And the listener is Tessa Thompson, who's playing the woman at the other end of this helpline where people can, apparently it just seems, call up about anything, any distress they're feeling in this very confusing time. And so what you're watching is just only her. You have all these celebrity voices who are calling in, you know, Aaliyah Shawkat, Margaret Cho, Casey Wilson, Rebecca Hall, even from Godzilla, taking her time off from Godzilla. And she's just trying to figure out what they need to hear. The problem with the film is that this is also about a woman who is burned out at her job and not very engaged. And so you're watching a person who's not engaged hold conversations with people and doing a bad job, which is pretty tedious after a while. But there are a couple scenes in here that I really like, a couple callers who are good. The best one is she gets a call from this incel guy who really gets under her skin talking about his attitudes about women. And she finally has a tiny spark of life. But otherwise, I think Steve Buscemi didn't do a great job as a director pulling anything out of this performance.
Trees Lounge is the last feature I remember from Steve. That's got to be 25 years ago. Has he done anything between Trees? I'm sure he's done some television directing. But Trees Lounge, I think, is the last
I remember
feature
Trees Lounge. I enjoyed
it was a great
that
movie.
Film. Yeah.
Kind of a, you know, a lounge movie.
Yeah. The Listener is the movie we're talking about, directed by Steve Buscemi. Alessandro Kamen wrote it. Tessa Thompson stars. It's unrated, available on demand. Femme is a British thriller starring Nathan Stewart Gerrit and George MacKay. The film's written and directed by Sam H. Freeman, Ung Chun Ping. Tim, what'd you think of Femme?
Yeah, this is actually a very powerful film, an adaptation of a little short that they made a few years ago that I think was in Cannes or something like that. We meet Jules, a young black, gay, transvestite man. cross-dressing man, joyous life, having a fabulous time. He's a big star at this club where he performs as Aphrodite. One night after he performs, he goes out. He sees this guy checking him out, you know, eyes contact, that kind of thing. Nothing happens. They go on about their business. He goes into a little shop. Same guy sees him, but this time he's with his manly friends. Says a couple of gay slurs. Our guy, under his breath, whispers something. You didn't say that when you were looking at me 20 minutes ago. You know, one of those kind of things. This leads to a vicious, vicious, humiliating beating of that guy. Destroys him for quite a while. Goes into a shell. Stops performing. One night, months later, he goes to a gay sauna. He sees that guy. He's not in drag, though, so that guy does not recognize him.
Nah.
He decides to start a relationship with that guy. He decides he's going to get revenge on that guy. And we get that movie. This is really, I mean, as a thriller, absolutely, totally it works. But it's a film that speaks to this thing, this real, real thing. It's even better. Again, harrowing. He is beaten so severely in that scene that I told you about, in the context of the scene, left naked on the street. This happens. This is not made up.
Yeah.
This has happened. So they go there in this movie. And it sort of explains, and they have to, because he wants revenge, and he has to have a good reason.
Femme is the film. It's a British thriller. It's unrated, starring Nathan Stewart Jarrett. You can see it at AMC's The Grove in Beverly Hills. For our Film Week critics, I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up, Joseph McBride, author of Billy Wilder, Dancing on the Edge, Joe's new book, looking at Billy Wilder, his family fleeing Europe during the Holocaust, coming, of course, to Hollywood and having such a huge influence both as a writer and as a director. We'll talk about the life and career of Billy Wilder with Joseph McBride coming right up. It's Film Week on LA's 89.3. And if you missed any of the reviews with Tim Cogshell or Amy Nicholson, you can hear just exactly what they had to say about all this week's films at LA's.com/filmweek or by listening wherever you get your podcasts. Much more to come in just 90 seconds.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.